Matrix's initiative, it's a laboratory for the EU enlargement. As now, most of the riparian Black Sea states are candidate states, thinking about Ukraine, Georgia, Turkey. And therefore, it is my personal opinion that the EU policies related to enlargement should be in a way harmonized with the Matrix's initiative project.
The connectivity through the Middle Corridor is quite important for our region in terms of energy security, but we have to put our efforts in it as well in order to create the required infrastructure for obtaining those energy sources coming from this important region.
Welcome everyone, this is Budapest Outlook, the podcast channel of the Hungarian Institute of International Affairs. My name is Péter Pál Kránitz, Senior Research Fellow of the Institute. Today's episode is about a very special topic, an initiative launched by our institute called the 3 plus 2 Seas Initiative, which aims at bringing together specialists from Central and Eastern Europe, the South Caucasus and Central Asia, to discuss potentials of interconnectivity between the Middle Corridor and the 3 Seas Initiative. We held a workshop and a roundtable discussion on the matter with guests from 4 countries. We are privileged to have Mihai Sebe, head of unit of the European Affairs Department of the European Institute of Romania, and Sándor Seremet, Senior Research Fellow of the Hungarian Institute of International Affairs. Let me first turn to Dr. Mihai Sebe. Please explain briefly what is the 3 Seas Initiative, or the TSI, all about.
The 3 Seas Initiative is a regional cooperation mechanism started a decade ago at the initiative of Poland and Croatia. It is meant to support the countries in Central and Eastern Europe to develop their infrastructure, their energy and digital infrastructures, while also helping a better coordination in the region. It contains only EU member states as participating states. It is not a project opposed to the EU, but on the contrary, it is a project that supports the European project and helps the development of the countries in the region, and also is a project meant to strengthen the transatlantic relationship. In a way, it's one of the first new initiatives after joining the EU, and is also an initiative that, in my personal opinion, has already reached its political maturity and can only go further from this moment on.
What about the Middle Corridor? Has it also reached maturity?
Well, the Middle Corridor, or to be very professional, Trans-Caspian International Transportation Route, is not a new initiative. So basically, it's there since the early 2010s. However, it started to gain some momentum after 2014, when certain logistics companies like Maersk, for example, decided to avoid the North Eurasian transportation route that runs through Russia and Belarus. And they decided to move it a little bit to the south in order to engage the, let's say, neutral states of Central Asia and endorse the possibilities of other regions. There is a significant milestone of this project, which is the Baku-Tbilisi-Kars railway that concluded in 2016, that runs from the port of Baku to Tbilisi and then towards Kars in Turkey, which allows to connect the already existing railway infrastructure of Central Asia that's connected to China with the railway system that runs through Turkey and hits Europe. So basically, the infrastructure in a way is there, the willingness to use it is there, but still, as everything that's kind of new, it still needs quite significant developments in order to be able to be that not only a substitute to other transportation routes, but also to be transformed to an economic zone that would persuade economic growth in the region.
What are the major challenges opposing this project?
First of all, the multimodality of the project. What I mean by this, it's not simply a route of railways, let's say, because the goods coming from China, first of all, starts on the Chinese railways, then they hit Central Asia when they have to switch to the Russian standard of railways, which is wider. Then they run till the shores of the Caspian Sea when they have to be placed on ferries. Then those ferries hit another port. Then they are being placed on other railways. and so further and so on. If they go to Romania, then they have to be again put on ships in Georgia, or they continue to Turkey. Well, these ports or the port infrastructures can in a way create what we call bottlenecks. And this effect is basically influencing the capacity of this corridor, because even the supply chains are just as strong as the weakest link in them. And in my opinion, the weakest links over here are the port capacities and the very challenging navigation conditions on the Caspian Sea.
What about the Three Seas Initiative? How connected are East Central European and Eastern European states?
Well, historically, the countries in our region have been more or less not very well connected because the impact and the infrastructure was to east from west, from Soviet Union to Western Europe, especially in the energy aspect. As regards today's situation, things have improved, but still we are lacking a full complete Via Carpathia from north to south and Oriol to sea from Gdansk to Constanza port. There are still countries in the region whose segments of the highway Via Carpathia are not yet finished. Yet I believe that we are now in a much better situation than we were, let's say, 10 years ago when the initiative started. Also, the war against Ukraine helped us realize the importance of, how to say, old-fashioned infrastructure. This is a case of Romania, for instance, who invested a lot in the last couple of years in building a highway in the east of the country, in Moldova, to connect with the Republic of Moldova and northern Ukraine. And also, I believe this is a general feeling in other countries, such as Bulgaria and Greece, who now realize the importance of having a well-developed connection from, let's say, the Aegean, the Mediterranean part, up till the north of the continent. So I'm quite optimistic that if we put together everything on that we have on the table, we are going to reach an important progress in the future. Also, we need to better use the European infrastructure projects, the TEN projects and so on, to keep them in line with the regional development needs so we can avoid overlapping, and also that we can avoid any not useful duplication of the efforts. And also, in the last 2 years, we realized once more the importance of waterway infrastructure. Either we speak about ports, such as the port of Constanza, and need to develop its infrastructure to accommodate high capacity of grains, for instance, coming from Ukraine, but also the Danube-Biem water highway, so to speak. So if you develop Danube and Danubian ports to their full capacity, we may also add another element in the interconnectivity toolkit of the region.
How could the Three Seas Initiative go on without further institutionalization? What are the next steps that could enhance these development projects in terms of coordination?
At the time being, the initiative works in a way like, right, to say, medieval capital. It's an itinerant capital, and the administrative task is done by the presidential administration in the region. However, we may have, after the elections in Europe, a new round of discussion about the possibility of institutionalization of the initiative. Yet at the time being, I believe that so far the last decade has proved useful from that point of view of functioning of the initiative. Yet as the, for instance, the investment fund is developing, as we need to attract more and more investment, we may see in the future the possibility and the need to have, in a way, let's say, a Three Seas Mister or Lady to represent the region from that point of view, to have a Three Seas person that we can pinpoint and say, in this region, the Three Seas Initiative is represented by that person who he or he may have the ability and the staff to work together with all the participating states in the initiative. But this is still an open subject to discussion, so, and we see how things evolve in the future years.
I now turn to Sándor Sheremet. One strategic region for the interconnectivity between these two regions is the Black Sea, where right now a war is being fought. What the Russian war in Ukraine taught us, and is this more of a challenge or is this a possibility to strengthen these ties between two shores of the Black Sea?
Well, every challenge is a possibility in a way. What the Russo-Ukrainian war taught us, in my opinion, is that it's always better to stay on multiple pillars, or, if you allow me to use the parable, to keep our eggs in multiple baskets, and being too reliant on one particular route or on one particular supplier has that risk that in case the relations with that particular supplier worsen, or some decision comes that he is not reliable or it is morally not correct to continue doing business with him, it could create certain disruptions in the supply chains. Well, the initiatives that we are talking about today are basically sort of a solutions to that, but they also have certain risks because in these initiatives, there are also key players, key elements. If, as a time being, the projects are being developed, it's more about the cooperation, but when they will be running as smooth as they should, then these cooperations may also turn, in my opinion, it's my personal opinion, to fights over dominance in these initiatives. For example, in case of the Middle Corridor, we can predict or we can project that such key players as Azerbaijan, for example, can become dominant elements of this route, for example, because it is the biggest port that can get the stuff coming from China. And this is one of the strongest economic player in the South Caucasus that would transfer these goods. So the Black Sea from this, again, is a key element because on one shore of it, we have the EU, on the south shore of it, we have Turkey, which is a strong member of NATO. And on the north, we have Russia and Ukraine who are at war in at the time. And this condition of multiple players and multiple influences in the not too big body of water can create turbulences. So we have to also address this issue because the war will end one day. And after that, we'll have to settle the situation in order to provide the stability of the region. Because without this stability, the efforts that are being put now to connecting the three seas and the two seas may be jeopardized. So in order to provide a feasible and working economic construction for the connection of these two regions, we must also build a feasible security architecture.
What is Romania's stance on this? How does Bucharest's foreign policies fit in this picture?
From the point of view of the initiative, we have always supported the membership or at least the associated partnership status given to Ukraine and Republic of Moldova. When you speak about the Black Sea and the region, you need to have in mind that we always use this package, Ukraine, Republic of Moldova, more than often Georgia. So it is important for us to have stability in this country, to envisage in a way the end of the war in suitable conditions for Ukraine. And also, we need to have in mind that the Treaties Initiative, it's a laboratory for the EU enlargement. As now, most of the riparian Black Sea states are candidate states, thinking about Ukraine, Georgia, Turkey. And therefore, it is my personal opinion that the EU policies related to enlargement should be in a way harmonized with the Treaties Initiative project. We cannot afford to spend money on duplicating projects and initiatives, but rather we should use the existing framework to better optimize how situation and how the evolution is going. And stability in the region is crucial for any further advancement of the EU project and also for bringing prosperity and stability. When there is war, there is less trade, less beneficial trade, and less prosperity for the people in the Black Sea area. So therefore, having this security aspect solved, it's, my opinion, crucial before we can further advance the European project and the Treaties Initiative in the Black Sea area. However, if there is, with quote, let's say, a good side of the conflict, is that we realize the importance once more on the Black Sea region and that we should focus our attention on the security in that part of Europe.
Let's assume that the Russo-Ukrainian war ends today. Would all this fuss about the Middle Corridor cease too, Sándor Cseremet?
Since the Middle Corridor is already rolling, I don't think that any solution with Russia, for example, tomorrow would stop its development. The Middle Corridor is proven to be an alternative to the existing supply chains and transportation routes. I'm not sure that it will be the exclusive one because if you would just have a quick look at the figures, then we would see that if the middle corridor in the last couple of years, namely 2 years, increased in its volume significantly, and today it reached, if you're talking about containers, 80,000 containers annually in 2023, then the North Eurasian corridor that runs through Kazakhstan and Russia, or solely through Russia and Belarus, which decreased from 2022 2023 by 49%, it still lets through itself 211,000 TEU towards Europe. This is excluded the volume that is about the Chinese-Russian turnover back and forth. So this is the connection over there. So in my opinion, the economic reason and the numbers, if they will not be pushed by sanctions in any way, they will not eliminate the other routes that are running. Yet, to push the other prices down, or to get better conditions, the middle corridor will remain, and I think it will be prosperous. And it's beneficial, I think, for the countries that are participating in it, because we can see that if such projects are beneficial financially for the participants, then they will be persuaded to settle their conflicts that they have and to establish better cooperation. This is in terms of, or in case of the middle corridor, this is a crucial point. And the crucial point is the customs relations between the countries. Because not like in the case of that very North Eurasian corridor, where there is an economic union between the participant countries and the goods can be transferred without any interruption, this is not the case for the middle corridor. And this must be addressed, in my opinion. And I think it will be addressed with the proper cooperation of the countries of the region. And we see very good steps towards that in case of Kazakhstan and Uzbekistan. And I think it will also be the case for the countries of the South Caucasus as well. So there are things that can improve the regional cooperation through being connected by the middle corridor.
Many say that the EU enlargement would not serve de-escalation. On the contrary, it could be considered, for example, in the case of Georgia, as a red line by Moscow, and Georgia's accession would escalate tensions in the Caucasus. On the other hand, candidate countries' cooperation with the Three Seas Initiative could enhance economic integration into European markets of these states without further escalation. Mihai Sebab, do you think TSI cooperation in our neighborhood could pose an alternative to SWIFT enlargement?
On a personal note, I do not believe in the existence of an alternative to the EU enlargement, at least with eligible countries that require both the treaty's condition and the rule of law and the Copenhagen criteria. Why do I say that? It's because we have, just before the war, the Eastern Partnership, who didn't prove, in my opinion, to be that successful. It's now more or less dead in the water in this actual format. And we see that where the EU enlargement took place, we have had more or less periods of stability and economic prosperity, because the candidate states are forced to do reforms, but they do the reforms and they have an end in sight. Meaning if we do this and that reform, they are going to be a part of the European Union and have this and this benefits. And also the EU accession promise, in my opinion, helped maintain the stability for the time being in the Western Balkans. The Western Balkan countries are candidate states. They need to comply with some criteria and regulation, and therefore their internal policy is also being shaped by this European promise. There has been discussion throughout the EU in the last years about the possibility of differentiated integration, for instance. These are academic topics to be discussed that may be also taken into consideration by policymakers, but each of that speak about have the common word integration. As for the countries in Central Asia, they do not fit the geographical criteria to be a part of the EU, yet they may be influenced by the EU legislation, the acquis communautaire, and the EU ways of doing business as the EU come closer to them and the economic relationship becomes stronger. As for, let's say, the so-called red lines, in fact, in the last decade, we have seen Russia pushing their own red lines and not respecting them. And Georgia is a strong country with a strong European potential that has been acknowledged as such. And if we think we have in the EU, the case of Cyprus, which divided between Cyprus and Turkey, which is still a EU member state. And if we have this precedent, I don't think that, for instance, in the case of Georgia, we came up with different exception than that we already have. If we already proceeded to integration of Cyprus with only part of the territory, I think that the Georgians can always come say we want to replicate the same model like in the case of Cyprus. So at the end of the day, the enlargement and the EU are processes that cannot be substituted by anything else, neither by the Three Seas Initiative nor by the European political community or any other political construct or economical one in the region.
We have discussed political and commercial connectivity between these two regions and corridors. What about energy? Sándor, could you please enlighten us of the most important elements of connectivity between these two regions with regards to energy security?
After the outbreak of the Russo-Ukrainian war, Central European part of the EU faced significant issues with the energy supplies. And in order to solve these issues, many initiatives were launched. And mostly they focus on South Caucasus, in a way maybe Central Asia, but the lack of the infrastructure makes it a little bit difficult. In case of Hungary, we have agreements with Azerbaijan in order to import natural gas from there. It started at 1 million cubic meters. Now it must reach around 1 billion cubic meters annually coming from there. But then we also have that little thing that we have to address, which is the lack of the interconnectivity in the direction of north-south. So the pipes, the TAP or the TANAP coming from Azerbaijan, they're running through Turkey and then they hit the Balkans or Italy. And they, you know, they just run from east to the west. And now we have to work on that, how we're going to put that to the north, to our regions. But besides that, we also have a very ambitious project that is addressing the green agenda of the EU and the region in particular, which aims to construct, by the cooperation of four countries, namely Azerbaijan, Georgia, Romania, and Hungary, this agreement concluded in December 2022, in order to construct an underwater power cable that would run from Azerbaijan through Georgia, Black Sea, Romania, and would end in Hungary, that would import the green energy generated in the South Caucasus, mostly in the green energy generation facilities of Azerbaijan. If you remember, I mentioned the hard navigational conditions on the Caspian Sea. Those are provided by the strong winds that are over there. But as the parable says, if life gives you sour lemons, make lemonade out of them. So the Azerbaijani engineers decided to work together with the Saudi Arabian company of Masdar, and through their cooperation, they're going to be constructed a serious wind power generation plant in the Caspian Sea. It's going to be offshore power generation using or utilizing those very Caspian winds that gives hard times to the ferries crossing the Caspian Sea. So basically, we see that this region is critical not only from point of view of logistics and transportation, but also from point of view of energy supply. But the approach of Baku, for example, for energy transit is, very pragmatic, I would say. Because before that, there was a plan to construct the so-called Nabucco gas transportation line or carbohydrate transportation line from Azerbaijan, but it failed. Today, the approach of Azerbaijan is that we are ready to provide whatever you need, but we will not spend a penny on constructing the infrastructure for that. So this lies on the EU and the European continent in a broader way. If we are willing to provide this, then we can reach certain benefits from that. Even though Baku will not be able to serve all the needs of the European continent in terms of gas or oil, but they negotiate quite a talented way with Turkmenistan and Iran, which is not the best friend of Azerbaijan today. But still, the Turkmen gas can enter the European markets through Iran by the swap deal that was conducted by Baku and Tehran, meaning that Iran buys the Turkmen gas and provides its own gas to Azerbaijan, which is then being transported to the West. So basically, as we can see from these examples, the connectivity through the Middle Corridor is quite important for our region in terms of energy security, but we have to put our efforts in it as well in order to create the required infrastructure for obtaining those energy sources coming from this important region.
There is one more important aspect of regional cooperation, and it's defense. The Romanian president is one of the loudest advocates of turning the Three Seas Initiative into a defensive cooperation. What do you see, Mihai Sebe? What are the prospects for such a development?
Well, in personal capacity, the Three Seas Initiative was designed, as I said from the beginning, as a geo-economical project and not like a military association. For that, we have the Bucharest 9 format, which brings together all the NATO states in the region. However, the Three Seas Initiative plays and will play a strong role in what I like to call the general resilience of the society in Central and Eastern Europe. If we have better connectivity, we may develop the transportation access needed for the military, for the famous military Schengen that we still speak about. Also, if we have better cybersecurity and digital connectivity, we'll have increased resilience in the society. And if we have stable energy, we have the basis for future economic growth. I don't think that the Three Seas should ever become a military-oriented organization, but rather it should be complementary with other formats dedicated to security. As it is, already the Three Seas has done a lot and is going to do even more in the future from, let's say, this soft side of hard military security. And this, in my opinion, is already a step forward if we compare with what we have, let's say, a decade ago in the region.
Thank you all for sharing your insightful thoughts. This was Budapest Outlook of the Hungarian Institute of International Affairs. Stay tuned for more.